Now I'd like to welcome Jordan and Aurora Coffee. You knew them formerly from American Harvest, and they have a new restaurant and food offering coming online. They were right in the middle of the pandemic when they made their decision to close down, and now they're opening a new concept. One of the things we want to leave with is the impact these mitigation strategies or mitigation on our restaurants have had on the business, on your livelihood, if you will, and then how you're accommodating that moving forward.
We are in kind of a unique position right now in that we're still in our build out phase and we're not operational yet. My operations in the moment are not affected by the mitigations. If things go as planned, we'll open hopefully the first week of December for carry out and prepared meals and prepared goods, et cetera. So we're sort of in a spot where we can tailor our needs and expenditures to the current mitigations. Rather, some other restaurateurs are just trying to figure out how to pay their staff, have 20 plus employees. We're opening with a really small group of core individuals to help us get through this first opening phase. So we're just sort of banking on the core group of individuals to carry us through the first couple of months before we hire on more staff and try to figure out how to move forward.
So yeah, you make a very good point. You have the luxury of kind of setting your model up in this environment, whereas the others had to adjust. And there's a group of restaurant owners who are suing, I think, around and saying, if new mitigations have come, we're not going to be able to stay open, laying off people, then rehiring them. You have the luxury not to necessarily have to go through that, but also to adapt your model and with carry out. We're going to hear soon from Nico Paz about how he's adjusted his model. Your decision in closing American Harvest, what was it related to some of these mitigations or the effect of the pandemic at all?
Absolutely. So in March, when COVID hit, we were in the middle of lease negotiations to sign another 5-year lease. I was in the middle of buying out my partner, August Morzowski, who's recently retired. So the plan was to sign another 5-year lease at American Harvest. I was going to become the sole owner of that company, move forward with the long-term goals of opening a second restaurant or moving to a smaller location. We sort of made the decision to move out of that space and try to come into a smaller location with a much more manageable overhead. As soon as COVID hit, like, to me, having a 200 seat plus restaurant in a time like this was just a risk we weren't willing to take. So although we've incurred a significant expenses doing a new build out, we think that the long-term savings of being in a smaller space will sort of help us weather the storm.
So some of the data I've seen is about 80% loss of business transactions, sometimes about 50% of revenues. And many really feel this, they may not be able to recover. There's some suggestions between 30 and 50% of businesses will not return if there's these new mitigation. But we're also seeing new entrants into the market in retail and restaurants, which I think is interesting. You've been on kind of both ends of that. How are you going to move forward in mitigating the spread of the virus at your restaurant to make customers safe? Obviously now we have to be outside. But what measures have you been taking to do that?
So right now, we only have 3 or 4 of our staff members working on things in the space right now. And our intentions, no matter what happened with the governor's decision to close indoor dining again, no matter what, we were going to get through this winter with only carry out and curbside and catering, to keep our staff safe, to keep guests safe. Like Jordan said, we went into this thinking, how do we get through the winter no matter what new mitigations are put into place? There's only a few of us in the building at a time. Customers will only be able to come in and pick up, or we will bring to cars and do curbside service and offsite catering until we can get through the winter and see what the spring brings us.
But thank you for joining us, and thank you for this new concept. I loved American Harvest, and I can't wait. If you could, tell us the address so we know where to find you.
Yeah, so Luminary is 3121 Headley. We're right in between Grab a Java and Mr. Battery.
Great. Thank you so much. And if you would, please stick around for some questions. Thank you. Nico Paz, the owner and executive chef at Azteca and also located in Montville, or not also, but near there in Montville. Nico, thank you so much for joining. And could you just a little experience when mitigation measures came in spring, how that impacted your business and how you're going to project the impact of your business going forward?
Well, thank you very much for having me here. First of all, there's no business unusual because nothing is usual from all this. You know, I just heard from the health part of this issue. I heard for the economic part of this issue. I believe us as business owners have to reinvent ourselves. What are we doing forward? What are we doing now? And how we got to adjust to these times? And that has been very, very unprecedented on my business itself. When all this started, I think it was important to keep my employees, everybody employed, because we didn't know how would that affect our business. If we would have curbside and a lot of orders at once, then if we don't have enough workers, then how we supplied a demand of food to our customers. So all this has been a reinvention for us. At the beginning, it was really hard. It reminded me to 2007 when I opened my business. In 2008, we had the recession, the economy hit the bottom. So it's kind of like a similar time. And what we did during those times came back to me as how can we overcome these times? Now it's a little bit different because it's more like we didn't have restrictions back then. We didn't have all these mitigations and everything we're going through right now. But what we did have was challenge. And what did we have is the challenge in times, people not having any money, seeing people like suffering through these. And what has helped my business thrive, and I say thrive during this moment, because we have been lucky to be a business that are getting the support of the community, because we have been helpful to communicate that to our community. Social media have been a key for me to express on my videos how Azteca is doing the day to day. What are we doing to be better, from changing our containers to recyclable containers, for helping our community, for moving our food truck to feed people with less needs, to create a pay forward program wherever you can get meals and help others. It reminds me back to those times whenever if I have 10 and you have zero, then we both have five. So I think that's why Springfield has been so great on respond to our business in a way they have. They have seen that, like, no matter what or how hard the economy hit us and how hard the restrictions comes into place into my business, they can relate to me and wait for me to come in and say, hey, it's going to be okay. We're going to keep feeding you the food. Because I think that's what it makes Azteca a big, it makes Azteca balance in this time. It has encouraged us to continue to do so, because our point at the beginning was always feeding people. We didn't see the economic side, and that's very idealistic. We don't worry about money. It's very important in times where money is so important. But if we start worrying about how we're going to feed these people, what are we going to do when the curbside from 5 to 7 is a line of 80 cars? What are the challenges that become through being focused on just feeding people? And by doing that, it moved in a way that, like, the business was like, oh my God, we've been busy than before. You know, from 5 to 7, we have a line of cars like Chick-fil-A does. And we're very lucky and thankful for the community to have that. And like, what can we do to also give the community part of that, give back, like help other businesses and help other people struggling during these times? I think that's been key through our success and through us thriving during these times.
Well, it seems like you have adjusted well, and of course a shift to take out and pick up. And one of the things I'd like to shift now to, I believe, is Taylor Anderson on the line, or Allison, are you here to talk about Capital City Takeout Challenge?
Yes, Taylor and I are actually both on the line, if we're ready to transition, I'd be happy to start.
Please do, and then we'll get back to some questions, but thank you for doing this.
Of course, great. Well, thanks, Bruce, so much for inviting us to be here. I'll be quick. My name's Allison Richard. my brother, Taylor Anderson, and my mom, together with Anderson Legislative Consulting, as well as several other sponsors throughout Springfield, have kind of taken it on to create this Capital City Takeout Challenge, like Bruce mentioned. And the whole point is to show our support for the locally owned, you know, independent restaurants that are here in and around the Capital City. The challenge or the game that we are putting on is essentially what it sounds like. We're going to have a challenge for Springfield residents and anyone who is wanting to eat in Springfield or the surrounding area. They are able to participate, and the participation is just by going to the restaurants and spending at least $15. Individuals who spend the $15 are then able to enter into the contest. We have three tiers of prizes: the grand prize, the second tier, and the third tier. The grand prize will be for $1,000. And to enter into winning the $1,000 or the subsequent second and third prizes, you would just need to go to at least five different Springfield locally owned restaurants and submit your receipts to our Capital City Takeout Challenge at gmail.com. There are also, obviously, we will have social media accounts. There's a Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, as well as Snapchat. We will be having weekly mini games inside of the challenge as well to get our participation. But the main goal and the drive is to get individuals that when they are choosing their takeout options, that they choose locally and help support our local businesses. I will let Taylor add if he has anything else. I'll just mention that the three tiers for the prizes, I mentioned the grand prize will be $1,000. The second prize will be a $300, and the third prize will be $100. There will be one grand prize winner, 5 second place, and 5 third place.
What do we do with that email again? If we want to participate, we send you an email?
That's correct. Those who are wanting to enter into the challenge or the contest, they need to take a picture of the receipt from the restaurant. Spending at least $15 is the minimum on the receipt or the email, just including their contact information. At that point, their submission will then be entered into the system. Like I said, to be eligible for any of the prizes, you do have to frequent five different restaurants. So we're trying to spread it out throughout the city.
Thank you so much. And what a wonderful opportunity to exactly what we're talking about, especially around locally owned businesses and restaurants here in town. So thank you for leading that. Dr. Sundaresan, one thing I do want to start getting in discussion around: what can we do to prevent the spread of this virus, especially as we come through Thanksgiving time? And then how, again, on the other side, do we mitigate the harm to our businesses? But for the spread of the virus, Dr. Sundaresan.
Some of these innovative ideas and, you know, reinventing business, as Nico said, I think that's really the something very refreshing. But from a healthcare perspective, I just wanted to say the biggest problems that we face are keeping our patients safe and workforce. Some of the strategies that are there for healthcare can definitely be shared and customized for businesses as well. In a situation that we are facing with excessive community transmission, we all have to work together. For the holidays, IDPH as well as CDC have really good recommendations for how to keep ourselves safe and how to keep our families safe, especially with travel or families getting together. They have a lot of good guidelines with respect to what you need to do in terms of curtailing numbers of people, having, if you are around somebody who's vulnerable or with advanced age, if you're traveling, is a quarantine necessary? Do you need to get tested before that? How do you handle food? What kind of food to prepare? How to keep ourselves safe while getting together, indoor versus outdoor? Ventilation, all this is addressed in the guidelines. The same thing, even with businesses, when we need to pay close attention to ventilation, disinfection, these are some of the things that we need to make sure as the holidays approach too. These are some of the highlights that can help us control the transmission. Just to remember the three W's, which I was mentioning: wearing a mask, washing hands, watching the distance. These really, really do work.
I've been on many calls with you. There's a group of health officials in our community really trying to reach out to business owners to help prevent the spread of this. And wearing masks, a mask campaign is one of the things that continuously comes up. They ask me, how do we get more businesses to encourage mask wearing, both by their staff and their customers? Because that could prevent it more than anything. Kevin Lust, the impact of more federal support for our businesses, that was very significant the first round. I think it did allow, I think we would have saw, I don't know, anywhere from 30%, maybe 50% dropout of businesses. Will that be coming next? That was one of the questions in its impact. I didn't mean to put you on the spot about that, but if you have any new insights to that, that would be great.
Well, I don't mind you putting me on the spot, Bruce. Since we began with this, we've all been on the spot and trying to get the best information out to people we can.
I forgot to introduce you, Kevin, so if you could.
Yeah, so I'm the director of the Illinois Small Business Development Center at Lincoln Land Community College here in Springfield. And we're part of a statewide network, indeed a national network, that's supported by the Small Business Administration. And here in Illinois, with the Illinois Department of Commerce, and then locally, our host is Lincoln Land Community College. And we provide no cost to guidance for business growth to startup businesses, existing businesses. And of course, through the summer, we've been working with people who are trying to stay in business. So to your point, and actually to the issue that we had decided was worth mentioning in today's conversation, we've heard about the economy, we've heard about the public health side of things, and government has not been silent in this either. And through the year, we've seen the great success of the economic injury disaster loans provided by the Small Business Administration directly. We've watched the, particularly locally, the great success of the Paycheck Protection Program loans that were just dramatically added to the economy by our local bankers, the great job that those things have done. I don't have statistics for you, Bruce, on anyone who would say, yes, I would have closed without those. I do know anecdotally from having worked hand in hand with these folks through the year, both in their application process, as well as in the application of the funds that they did receive, that anecdotally, we can speak to many local examples of people that, but for that assistance, would not have been able to survive the times. So whether or not that translates into new programs, of course, remains to be seen. There's a great deal of uncertainty in Washington. The programs are federally based. So the best thing that we can say about that is stay tuned. However, there's a better thing that we can mention, and that's the fact that some of those programs that were initially provided through the CARES Act are still rolling. And among the CARES Act funding, there were funding to states to support their businesses. And some of those state funds have been translated into local dollars. Currently, the state's business interruption grant program, the link is, those funds are still available. If any of our viewers here or any of the participants in our group who know businesses that have not yet applied for a business interruption grant through the state of Illinois, by all means, I'd urge you to do that. When they announced that program, this is round two of what we call the big grants, $100 million was set aside of the $200 million total for downstate Illinois. And there still remains a significant percentage of those funds, that $100 million that was set aside for our part of the world, to be taken advantage of. So anyone who hasn't gotten that application in, by all means, do so. Obviously, many, many applications. There's a time frame there that they're working through, but doing the best they can. And then also, I think you'll probably see more and more about this. The city of Springfield has announced $5,000 grants to support businesses with the COVID-related expenses. Still part of that CARES Act funding going through the state of Illinois, the city of Springfield now is prepared through their community block grant development funds to start offering $5,000 grants. And I put the link there. Again, that application is going to be live on Monday. The big grants, of course, you can apply anytime. The Monday application timeframe is there, and they hope to start. I think the timeline on the website shows that they'll actually be prepared to start dispersing funds through December. So any questions that people have about those programs or really anything that we can do within our organization to help out any small businesses, we urge you to reach out to us again. Our services are available at no charge, and I'll put my contact info in the chat box as well. But again, that's the Small Business Development Center at Lincoln Land Community College. And we've been really happy to reach out to people through these events, Bruce, and thanks again for spearheading that.
Well, thank you as the honorary and co-host of this webinar series, Kevin. I know you take all the battling today was your fault. Anything that happens wrong is Kevin's fault on this. Anything that happens correct. Anyway, Kevin, thank you. Of course.
You're welcome. That's just because I don't get to go on first. That's why.
That's right. So like I said, we're still running a little over because we had the late start. We still have a good number of things in the chat box. What I did want to get to Dr. Kriz, would you like to comment on kind of the impact of the regional and outside of state boundaries question? Or what would you, yeah, go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, in responding to Greg's question, yes, I think you're going to see similar patterns throughout the state. If you remember when I put up the graph of the our return to normal index, it looks very similar for Illinois as a whole and Springfield. There are some differences, but it's pretty similar. For border counties, I would think that the economic effects would be even stronger because, as you said, people have alternatives. They can go across state boundaries and participate in activities they couldn't otherwise here. The one thing that would kind of mitigate that a little bit is the whole notion of traveling. We just don't see mobility. Again, mobility indices are falling, and so people are traveling a lot less. A lot of people are reconsidering traveling for the holidays. And so I think it's going to be a little bit less than it would if it was something that happened during a regular period of time. So in a way, COVID keeps us more of our activity in the state.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, and then in terms of how it would affect the regional economy, you know, anytime you have people shifting behaviors around, it creates economic losses and economic distortions. So it's definitely not a good thing.
Great. Another question. I know it's a question that's been asked through the media for the last few weeks, and especially I mentioned early on, we have a group of restaurant owners that are filing a suit or have so about the mitigations in our local area. As we all know, our local officials allowed not to take some of the mitigations suggestions or requests, if you will, I guess, from the governor. One of the questions through that, and I'm going to ask at least Dr. Sundaresan again, have there been areas where we found that restaurants and bars are significant or have been transmitting the virus at a higher rate than others? That's been a question that many have asked. Did you want to comment on that at all, Dr. Sundaresan?
Yeah. So, you know, the data that's being collected here from Sangamon County is restaurants and bars together. It's not broken down. And that's how it's reported in IDPH as well. That's one thing. And the second thing is when we talk about outbreaks, we have to show that there are about 5 cases which are epidemiologically linked. And it's very hard to prove that this is where it came from. This is how the infection was acquired. That epi link may not always be established. So as far as outbreaks go, we've not seen that many outbreaks, but what happens is if somebody acquires the infection and they're going to different locations and then they're transmitting those the infection to family members as well, those two become our top reasons where or locations where the infection is acquired. So that is being tracked by the contact tracers. And as the process gets ironed out better, as we go ahead, the reporting is going to be more specific and we'll have better data as well.
Great, thank you. Thank you for that very much. I did want to mention one other thing about the University of Illinois system and our saliva-based testing. It's in a surveillance or a screening area. I just looked at Champaign positivity rates about 0.5. And what we have is an app, actually. The students carry around an app that has our registered time that we need to take the test. When I say we, UIS has not adopted it, but the Champaign campus has, that tells us if we haven't taken the test in the last 4 days, or if we tested a positive, or we've been in proximity of someone who has in the last so many days around their contagious time, we have an access denied or access allowed that allows in or it denies us access into the buildings to prevent anyone that has a higher risk than normal to come in contact. And I do know some restaurants and bars in Champaign area have been using that, even though it's not, you know, a city or county registered app, to allow people in and out. That is one strategy that they've been using for mitigating. But I hope what that does is it allows a lot of really good contact tracing data to be used on see where exposures were. In Springfield campus, we had a few more than that we liked exposures recently. We put together our mitigation strategy, which was 2 days of non-contact use, but through it allow us to do the contact tracing. Through the contact tracing exercise, we found that they were not transmitted on campus. So then we allowed students and activities to occur back on campus. So I hope those are some ways that we've been showing at least that, you know, balancing that business side, at least our education side, and protecting our community. I'd like to open that question up, and we will conclude here shortly, but any of the panelists, if they would offer, I asked, I think, Aurora and Jordan what that they were doing, and a little bit of Nico, but any, you know, feel free to jump in here, any panelists, if you would, how can we do that to preserve the livelihood of our business owners, which we have many on here now, and I really appreciate that. Now, I also appreciate the advice or resource we're providing the community in this way, but how do we balance our livelihoods, our, you know, our professions against the spread of this virus? If you don't mind, Dr. Criz, I'm looking at you first, if you don't, you know, comment, and then I'll go around the other panelists and then we'll conclude here.
You just know that I like to talk. So, from an economic perspective, you know, as I said in my presentation, one of the key issues is how long the mitigations are in place. And this is something where, you know, things like targeted mitigations are very effective if they can be done. But that requires that you have strong contact tracing and strong testing in process. Like you said, we were able to demonstrate that at UIS because we had, you know, everybody who was going to be on campus was tested. And so we were able to identify that it wasn't coming from community spread on the campus, and we're able to take a very targeted approach to things. Depending upon the website that you take your data from, the state of Illinois as a whole has only hired a fraction of the contact tracers that it should have based upon case counts in order to do full contact tracing. Whenever that situation is in place, you need these more, I'd say, blunt-edged policies in order to suppress things. So, an economist by the name of Paul Romer, who I know means nothing, he's a Nobel Prize winner, wrote a paper at the beginning of the pandemic, and basically he was laying out what would be necessary to reopen the economy. And one of the things that he said is we should be testing 30 million people a day for this, because, you know, you need that kind of, you know, surveillance of the community in order to be able to catch outbreaks as they happen and put them into place. So it's not as easy. And I want people to you know, please listen. It's not as easy as saying the economy or health. They're really intertwined. If you can't keep people healthy, you can't keep them working, and then, you know, you need to have, as you said, that kind of balance between the two that will keep us moving forward. And so from an economic perspective, I don't think it's necessary in either or. I think it's being smart about how we do these things.
And that's why I put this up again about that. This is our surveillance testing on the Champaign campus, has the largest population. And you can see the spike here in the middle, and then we institute mitigation strategies, and then we maintain a relatively, I think, good outcomes since. But that's when we're testing at least once a week, sometimes twice a week, of our students that are pretty contained to the campus. And this is the number of tests that we've been doing daily. And UIS has similar graphs, but just a lower population. So I brought up the Champaign one. So I do agree, and thanks for sharing that. It's a combination of things. I think no one wants mitigation. If we were able to keep the virus under control, I think mitigation gets reduced, at least its impact does. So if we can figure out that way that businesses can keep, you know, everyone safe, of course, and then continue with the economy. Nico or Aurora, would you like any parting words in that regard, or what your outlook is as we enter the winter? Nico, I'll go with you first. And you're on mute right now. There you go, thanks.
Okay. Well, I think it's a really thin line here about the economic and the health. I always been through thinking about the health, because without health, we cannot continue to work, we cannot continue to operate, and it's very important to me. That's why I shut down so many times my restaurant and continue to do so, wearing a mask and putting all this enforcement to maintain the low numbers. What is frustrating to me is that we as a small businesses have to shut our doors, and yet alone other businesses like big corporations have the doors open, and all these grocery stores have the doors open. I know they're wearing a mask, they're doing what they're supposed to, but it's really hard whenever you're not spending that money in the economy, eating in a restaurant, then you have that extra money to go shop online, give the money to other people that don't live in the community and don't help us personally, as help our community, you know? It goes to other places that doesn't benefit us as a community in the overall. And it's very, very difficult. I don't know what the answer is. I try to follow what the SIU, the health department, and all the resources that I have from the community to get informed and to make the best decision for the community and to take that into consideration. But it's at the same time kind of frustrating that we don't know that the restaurants and bars are the ones causing this. You know, we are not, I don't think we are the problem. We're just trying to survive during these times. I think we need information or answers on what to do to help prevent, but at the same time, do not affect us business-wise that we have to shut our doors because we don't have enough to continue to move forward.
Great. Thank you so much for being on and the comments. And good luck, of course. I'll be in line as often as I can. And congratulations on what you've done so far, Nico. Thank you again. Yeah. Aurora, Jordan, looking forward, how can one, the community help, and what can we expect out of your new Luminary Kitchen Provisions?
Yeah, you know, I'm with Nico in that, you know, it's really kind of a frustrating time to be a small business owner, especially a restaurant or bar owner right now. You don't want to say that you're being singled out or picked on, you know, but it is tough when there's not exact data or numbers to say, like, it's happening there in these places, you know, and then you drive by, you know, these big box stores and you see it's packed. So it is hard to kind of reason that in your head that, you know, like, of course, you know, we run restaurants, we're not doctors. So we turn to science and medicine for answers, you know, and it's frustrating, but, you know, like we will do whatever will keep our staff and our customers safe. In the end, you know, that's what's important, you know? And so, like Nico mentioned, you know, it's all about adapting right now. And so I think that we went into building Luminary with that in mind. And, you know, so no matter what happens this winter with further mitigations or people just being nervous to you know, to go out and to eat, you know, it's all understandable. So so we will have a quick service lunch concept during the day. You know, you can place your order, and sandwiches and things will be quick service there. We will focus a lot on catering. We will have a market and provisions that will be online, so you can shop our market online. A butcher counter. So we're really thinking of all the different ways that we can kind of still be successful no matter what the landscape is going forward. And then in the spring or whenever things kind of seem to lessen or we have more answers, you know, we'll essentially open a business for the second time and look at what opening a business is like post-pandemic or at least with more answers and guidance.
I think the key to all this is you, the community, you, the business owner, and connecting with our local health officials. We hope there's going to be more interaction with that in the future. Thank you, everybody. Our guests, Dr. Vidya Sundaresan, Dr. Ken Kriz, Ryan McCray, and again, Aurora and Jordan Coffee and Nico. Thank you so much.